there are overwhelming, turbulent times, but that also means there is major potential to fill the cracks with new ideas and to transform these destructive systems. There are specific root causes for problems and holistic solutions everywhere. There is room for prosperity, there is room for regeneration and a shift in values. Another reality is possible, and that's what we're exploring here today. Welcome to Sage Talking.
My name is Melissa Chappell, and I live in Utah in the United States. And I have 4 kids. One is 12, and the rest are adult children, so 24, 27, and 29. And I have 4 grandkids as well. So I had a bit of a late baby, and it's so fun being an older mom. She's fantastic, and I know a lot more now that I've had a chance to raise 3 kids. I've been doing birth work since I was about 21, and I'm 50 now, so that is a very, very long time. I started out as a childbirth educator, and then I became a doula, and then I became a doula trainer, and then I became a midwife. In about 2016, I became a midwife. So, I've been doing midwifery for almost 9 years, and I absolutely love it. I opened a birth center with my very dear friend and business partner, Seasons, and she and I opened that birth center in 2018, and then we quickly expanded to a bigger one, and then we've just gotten our 3rd. So we have a very, very busy birth center practice, and we have 9 midwives in total, and we do home births and birth center births, and we're very, very busy.
The theme is midwifery care that bridges the sacred and the scientific, which I just love the sound of and the feeling of that sentence. Yes. That you have on your website.
So thank you.
I want to start off with a short and informative kind of quick fire session to catch everyone's attention. What are 3 myths or misconceptions about birth you would like to debunk that are really common?
I think probably the first is that it's dangerous. And a lot of people like to refer to historically, they say historically women and babies died all the time. And there are many reasons for that. One of which is that obstetricians, when birth moved into the hospital in around the turn of the 20th century, so around the early 1900s, doctors didn't know yet about pathogens. And so they were examining cadavers and then going straight to deliveries. And that caused what we call childbed fever. And many, many, many women were dying until we figured out that you need to wash your hands. And that's something that midwives have always done, even before birth came into the hospital, even before we knew about germs and pathogens, midwives would always wash their hands before they helped women give birth. There are things in modern medicine that are very, very useful for times when birth does become pathological, but birth is a normal physiological event in a woman's life, and it very rarely becomes pathological if we are supporting the woman in her own normal physiology. That means supporting her in good nourishment and low stress and just basic community support and plenty of sleep and mindfulness and exercise, moving your body intentionally. And if we're supporting women in those ways, very rarely is birth pathological. When it is pathological, we're very, very grateful for the modern medicine, because sometimes it can move in that direction. I think one thing that a lot of people have no idea of is that when my mother gave birth to me, it was actually much safer for her to give birth. And this is, I'm speaking specifically to the United States. I know that it's this way in many other industrialized countries as well. But my mother and many others' mothers actually had less chance of dying than we do today. And a lot of people say, well, that's because of, you know, modern ways of living. And when people say that, it makes me question them, because that kind of puts the onus on women themselves and kind of blames women. And I don't think it has much to do with women's bodies. I think that our bodies are powerful and strong. And even though we do live in modern situations, we still have these very powerful bodies that still remember how to birth and know how to birth and have not forgotten how to birth. So I think that's the first myth, is that birth is dangerous. It's actually inherently safe unless there's pathology, which can very, very rarely and occasionally happen.
Mm-hmm.
Let me think of what the second myth would be. I think a second myth, really important myth to debunk, is that vaginal birth after cesarean is dangerous. And we know that cesarean carries a very high risk, and that sometimes we do need to have a cesarean for the baby and the mother to be safe. But the World Health Organization has said that we probably need to do cesarean about 10% of the time. And right now across the world, it's around 30%. In some countries like Brazil, it's in the 80s and 90s. And that is 8 or 9 women out of every 10 are getting cut open to have their babies.
Crazy.
In the United States, yeah. In the United States, it's about 1 out of every 3 women are getting cut open to have their babies. So we know that that number is much, much, much too high. When we look at communities where they have low resources and they don't have good access to cesarean, they actually do have lower cesarean rates and good outcomes, because they're supporting the woman's physiology more. So we know that cesarean in itself carries a much higher risk of death and damage for baby, and it also carries a much higher risk of complications for subsequent babies. And I think that when we look at a woman having a previous cesarean and then look at her chances of having a vaginal birth after that cesarean, most providers that I hear that work in a more medical setting, they tell women that it's unsafe, that it's safer for them to have another cesarean. And the science just doesn't add up with that, with people telling women that. We know that it's actually safer to have a trial of labor and to try for a VBAC than it is to have a subsequent cesarean. And we know that it's safer for the mom and the baby and for future pregnancies. So that's another big, big, big myth. I think another myth is that, let's talk, since I am an out-of-hospital midwife, let's talk about that one. I think the other myth is that out-of-hospital birth is unsafe. And we have a very rigorous screening protocol when we are deciding whether someone is a good candidate for out-of-hospital birth. And in much of the world, in about 80% of the world, babies are born into the hands of midwives. And the countries that lose the fewest babies and lose the fewest moms have midwives caring for all of the normal low-risk deliveries, which tend to be, depending on where you are and what kind of resources people have at their hands, like if they have access to nutrition and shelter and not war-torn areas, then we know that about 80 to 90% of women are really good candidates for being with midwives, and that about 10% of women really do need to be in the hands of a carer that specializes in complications such as an obstetrician. So I'm very thankful for obstetricians when we have those pathologies in approximately 10% of pregnancies and births, but in all of the rest of the pregnancies, they would do well to be with midwives. And what we do know about midwives is they have much lower rates of cesarean, vacuum extraction, forceps deliveries, inductions, medications used during labor. Their rates of the women that they serve, the rates of breastfeeding for those women are much higher when they deliver with midwives. The rates of bonding with babies are much higher. The rates of satisfaction with their births are much higher. And just a side note, a lot of people don't really care about the woman's emotional health or satisfaction or trauma that might happen in a delivery. They only care about an alive mom and an alive baby. And I think that one thing that midwives really, really care about is how a woman is experiencing this rite of passage emotionally and mentally, not just physically. Yeah. So that's probably the third myth. It's actually quite safe to have a midwife. And midwives are highly skilled and trained in recognizing complications and knowing when we need to get more tools in the form of transferring to a hospital and using the services of an obstetrician. So we're quite skilled in that. And we're quite skilled in knowing when something's moving in a direction that doesn't make it safe to give birth out of the hospital anymore. So, for example, in my practice, my transfer rate is about 5%, and my emergent transfer rate in our entire practice, I should say, actually, is less than 1%. And that would mean where we, you know, we have an emergent transfer where we need immediate medical help, and that happens less than 1% of the time. So 99% of the time, more than 99% of the time, we have these very safe and straightforward deliveries. And sometimes we do need to, a woman may feel that she's exhausted and may need help with in the form of an epidural, but it's not an emergent transfer. We go and use more tools that are, we like to have more tools at our hands. So,
yeah. I love that you, kind of included this in the myths that you just debunked. Thank you for that, because I think, people are really losing sight of the importance of how crucial it is for that setup, that that birth that sets us up for life. Like, I mean, personally, I'm also going to touch on this because I'm also just really interested in this because I was a cesarean baby, and there are just so many different things also, you know, like IBS, chronically bloated stomach, a lot of psychosomatic issues that people have also linked. I mean, you can never be 100% sure is this exact cause correlation, but I think there are so many things where people are just losing sight of how important this really, as you put it on your website, sacred process is, which I think is such a beautiful word, because it feels like, you know, women going in and out of hospital, and then it's like this kind of very sterile, quite panicky process, especially how it's portrayed in movies. And then when I kind of dove into how different it can be, I was just like everything, you know, this is like everything connecting back to nature and to nature's cycles and rhythms, and just reconnecting really to Earth, which is obviously one of my biggest passion topics and what this podcast is all about. So I want to touch on what you said about birth being this physiological process, that if we create this environment for a woman to birth in a certain way, that it can be totally different and not this scary thing. So I actually want to touch on a post that somebody did on Instagram, Shannon Michaela, and she talked about this super interesting topic regarding hormones and theta brain waves during birth, so that the hormones like endorphins as natural pain relievers peak towards the end of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. And she talked about oxytocin, the love bonding hormone, which is then induced by skin to skin, and the theta brain waves, which I know nothing about, which our brain operates on labor. So where we operate in the subconscious and the feeling and pure intuition instead of conscious thinking, which I thought was so interesting. And then this is something I want you to explain a bit more. Hormones and this actually could operate or do operate on during labor. Are said to be potentially disrupted by disturbances like fluorescent lights or pharmaceuticals, the presence of strangers, or having your baby taken away immediately after birth. So that basically this birth can be this ecstatic event that our body leads us through. So how is this environment that is conducive to that best created in holistic birthing?
So I have such a low rate of complications, and most midwives do. And one of the ways in which we do that is by supporting the normal physiology of that cascade of hormones. And one of the things I teach doula trainings, and in my doula trainings, I say one of your main jobs is to keep the flow of oxytocin going. So we're constantly having that mantra in our heads. What can we do to keep the flow of oxytocin going? What can we do to reduce fear? What can we do to keep the woman just completely connected and grounded in her body? And so, for example, when I do a birth at a home birth or a birth center, incidentally, I just attended 4 births this weekend. So it was a lot. But in each birth, the lights were dim. There were candles or very low, low lights in the background. Everybody talked softly. There was music in some of the births. The partners or the loved ones were very, very close and to the woman, and always touching her and holding her and speaking softly to her. We do a lot of touch. Some women don't like to be touched, and that would be something where we would say, okay, that for her physiology, we need to just protect space for her and let her go inward, and she doesn't want that outward touch. And then other women really like to be held and touched and spoken softly to. And when we give encouragement, that releases oxytocin. When we share a warm cacao drink, that releases oxytocin, or a warm tea, or even just a drink of water can release oxytocin in someone. Just being, you know, giving to someone can release oxytocin. Lots of reassurance, you know, your body is working perfectly. This process is going exactly how it should be going. That reassurance is huge for releasing oxytocin. And so we're very, very much all about that releasing oxytocin and supporting that cascade of hormones as much as we can, and helping the body to be in that state where we call it labor land. Some of us midwives call it labor land, where a woman really does kind of get in a different state. And it's very, very cool to watch and to see women kind of close their eyes, or if their eyes are open, they tend to look a little glossy-eyed, like they're not quite all the way here. They're definitely somewhere else and they're present. And so it's very cool to see that connection to the divine happening. You spoke a lot about nature, and I tell my clients, I say, you are nature. If you can't connect those thoughts, you're probably not a good candidate for out of hospital birth, because we are nature. We are made of the same things that the trees and the sky and the stars and the soil and the birds are made of. And we are created in a way that allows us to engage in the same processes that Earth engages in. When, you know, she goes through the cycles of the seasons, or through the cycles of the moon, or through the cycles of the sunrise and the sunset, or through the cycles of the ocean waves. We are that essence. And so when we can support women in that, we see these beautiful, beautiful things happen, and we see many less complications happening because we're supporting that normal physiology. So when we have somebody who's in a setting where, you know, people are talking loudly and there are bright lights and there are machines beeping, and they're made to be in these positions that don't feel comfortable to them, and they're given drugs and IVs and all kinds of things like that, it definitely disrupts the normal physiology and the normal cascade of hormones. And sometimes, again, some babies need to be born that way for safety, or sometimes we do need those extra tools. But for the most part, when we introduce those tools unnecessarily, it really disrupts the normal physiological process, and then it causes problems. And so then the people who interrupted the hormones say, thank goodness we did these things, because
look what we saved you from. And really what happened is that they actually mm-hmm. caused the problems in the place. One of the things that I, when people are interviewing me to see if we're potentially a good fit, I do an interview almost as much as they do an interview, because I won't accept people into my practice that aren't willing to take time to connect with their divinity, to take time to connect with nature. Because if they are so disconnected from those things, from their inner strength and knowing and from nature, then they don't do well often in labor. And we do need those extra tools. And I don't like going to the hospital. I'm very grateful for the hospital. I'm very much in gratitude that we have those things when we need them, but I don't enjoy it. It doesn't, it's not my life's calling to serve women in hospital settings. I did about 600 births in hospital setting when I was a doula before I became a midwife. And I, now that I'm a midwife, it's really hard for me to go back. I do have to go back sometimes, you know, if I have to transfer somebody. But it's very difficult for me to go back in that setting where in my mind, I know that if we didn't separate that mom and baby, then the baby would do much better. And that the mom herself would do much better when she's not separated from this child that she is just absolutely in love with and feels the need, you know, this great, great desire to protect. And when we separate them, that is very, very difficult for me. So I don't like those kinds of settings. So when I have someone come in, I say, hey, what do you do to connect with nature? How do you feel about your inner strength? And what do you do to tap into that? And what do you do to connect with divinity? And how do you eat? How do you nourish your body? And do you engage in mindfulness? And every one of my clients who comes in has, you know, is working on that on some level. And as long as they're willing to work on that, I'm like, let's do this. Let's do this. And we can really help support that, you know, and through meditations. And building trust is huge, 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 huge. And I always joke that, you know, the medical providers often look at midwives and they're like, that's really fluffy and cute that you guys do that extra stuff and that your visits are long. And they're like, you're not doing anything but wasting your time. Maybe you enjoy that, but that's great that you have that socialization. But here at our practice, we focus on, you know, keeping everybody safe and alive. And I think what they don't understand is that when you build that trust and you support building trust with herself, then it actually does play into the clinical outcomes. We actually do see better clinical outcomes when we build trust and when we do support those normal things that anyone would have to do when they're going through a big rite of passage in their lives.
Like when I read through your website my research, I do have to say I was kind of tearing up. Like, and I always know that a topic is somehow very close to me, because that's I always start crying. Like if I'm talking about something, and sometimes I don't even know before, but I just talk about it or I read deeper into it, and then if I start crying about something, I know that somehow emotionally it affects me in a certain way, more than other topics would. And I also read through this questionnaire that you have, if people, you know, where people can just check, you know, would they be a good fit for your midwifery care. And I love that it includes, you know, diet and people taking responsibility and engaging in physical activities and moving their body and having a kind of a spiritual practice, or as you said, willing to dive into that and to explore that and to really take responsibility for that birth and make it be safe and healthy. And I think that's so, so beautiful. And this is obviously the holistic part that we're talking about. And I find, as you said, you know, before you mentioned, you know, in industrialized countries and having birth kind of also in hospitals, as you said, I'm also very grateful for like urgent care, and Western medicine is really good in emergency acute situations. But I also do think that birthing has become part of like this medical industrial complex, and
yes,
people, you know, being drugged and cut open really quickly and kind of quick in and out because we need this bed. And yes, like, I mean, it's, this is just crazy to me. And this for me is a testament also how far we have removed ourselves from everything that is natural and slow. Like, if you don't even have enough time to let a birth develop and to let somebody birth their baby in their time, it's like 16 hours. Well, this is too long. You know, we better be thinking about how we can, you know, move this along, because yes. And this is just crazy to me. So I would like to know, what are really parts for you where you're saying, you know, just some maybe crazy facts that people might not even think that they're true. If you go into the hospital, what are some of these observations where you're saying, this is the medical industrial complex and these are some things that are done in hospitals. It can be anything about the birth that is just, you know, done for financial industrial reasons that have nothing to do with actual birthing and this really sacred process.
Well, one thing that I tell people often when they're asking, what do you do and why do you do this? I don't get it. Why wouldn't you embrace modern medicine and be so happy that babies and moms don't have to die anymore? And that's actually not true. Moms and babies do die sometimes, even with modern medicine. And it's a tragedy, but it's also part of life, you know? And so one thing that I say is I actually own 5 different businesses, and 3 of them have to do, well, four of them, I think, have to really have a lot to do with birth. And then I own this food business on the side, but so I know what it takes to run a business. I know, you know, what it takes to have your bottom line, you know, be working for you and be in the black and not in the red. I know how to crunch numbers. And so when I say to people, okay, let's say that you're the CEO of a hospital and you've been given a directive by the board of directors to say, to make your hospital make more money. So you go through the numbers and you find that birth is 80% of your revenue. So, okay, that's what we're going to focus on. We're not going to focus on making the other 20% be big. We're going to focus on that 80% because that's huge. That's almost 100% of our profit comes from birth. So what can we do? Let's go sit around the board table, the boardroom table with all of the board members. And I'm the CEO and we're going to start kind of like brainstorming to see what we can do to make our bottom line be even bigger and our profits be even bigger and that 80% revenue be even bigger. Like, how can we bring in even more money in birth? And so we're all shooting out ideas. And what one of the things we come up with is we say, well, if we can get those beds empty, then we can bring in new customers more quickly. So how do we get those beds empty faster? Well, we can induce women and we can induce them Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, so that we don't have to pay for staff so much in the middle of the night, which is when most babies are born, if they're supported physiologically. And we can also do lots of C-sections. So the more planned C-sections we do, the more we can get those done Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 as well. And the more we can get people in and out, the more we can get new customers in. So then that will enable us to take even more customers than we have right now, which will make our profits even bigger. So, and then what's another way that we can really, really increase that revenue with birth? Well, the NICU is probably... The NICU, for those of you who don't know, is because it's called different things in different countries. It's the neonatal intensive care unit. So I think it's the intensive care unit for babies, for newborns. So, and I think it's called the NICU in some places or the NICU in some places. So we call it the NICU. So the NICU actually makes a lot of money because those little babies, they take a lot to keep alive. And so if we can get more babies in the NICU, that would also be helpful. So let's make sure that our NICU is always full, that every bed in our NICU is always full. So if we've got babies that are that are, you know, maybe they're not breathing as perfectly as we like. And we know that keeping them skin to skin with their mothers is probably the best solution. But if we can separate them from their mothers and get them in the NICU and put them on some of that really expensive equipment, then we can charge a lot of money. So then the whole team says, okay, great. We've got a solution. We're going to induce everyone. We're going to get more babies in the NICU. We're going to do planned C-sections. And that's going to get us a really good bottom line. So I think what people don't realize is that a hospital's revenue, most hospitals who do birth, their revenue from birth is 80% of the total hospital's. And that's an average. Obviously, some hospitals are different. Some are more and some are less. But if we, you know, looked at it from that perspective, like from a CEO perspective, then we can see how what we're doing in these settings is not good. It's not mother-centered. It's not baby-centered. It's not family-centered, which is what my care is. My care is mother, baby, family-centered. My birth center is mother, baby, family-centered. But a hospital system, because they have so many people coming through, they have to be system-centered. And as a CEO, I completely understand that. I don't agree with it at all, but I completely understand the perspective of having a system-centered care. You get sued less if it's system-centered. You make more money if it's system-centered. You have more organization with your employees if it's system-centered. But system-centered does not do service to the families.
Yeah. that almost made me cry. Like, just thinking about, you know, just these small little babies coming into the world and then being put, like, into these sterile little plastic boxes so somebody somewhere can make more money. I think that's absolutely abhorrent and definitely something that should not be the case if it's not actually necessary, because otherwise, you know, a baby would die or something. And that's, I think, another point you just mentioned where you said it's tragic that people, you know, still die. And death, I think, for most cultures is tragic, not in all.
Yes.
But I recently actually lost my grandmother, who was my only grandparent, and death does not, and it was sad, and it was weeks of saying goodbye and crying and going through this process and just deep pain and hurt. But at the end, it was, we made it beautiful, you know, and at the end it was a release for her and a joining of her with possibly all other souls that have gone before her that she possibly is reunited with now, and just being part of this cosmos of the universe and joining all the elements. And I think that is also something with that maybe our medical system in some ways is very much not geared towards health and providing, you know, health and happiness and contentment to people and just a really high life quality through reconnection with natural cycles. But I think it's very much geared often towards, okay, how can we prevent death?
Yes.
Because death is scary.
Yes.
And we don't want that, and it's kind of demonized in a way.
Yes.
But on the other hand, we're not really creating this environment of health and flourishing and thriving. It's more like we'll pump you full of drugs and do this X, Y, and Z so you won't die. But it's not like you will be really actually thriving in life.
Yes.
So I think this is just such a huge problem. And this is exactly why I think, you know, what we need again is a holistic view on life, on health, on everything, on birth. And this is something I also want to know from you, what are some of the most important aspects just that you use, like, straight out of Earth, where you say this is something kind of biomimicry, like, what do you take out of Earth and natural processes that you say, we can look out into nature, or maybe even how indigenous cultures and communities have conducted birth and created this environment. How can we realign ourselves in the modern world with the sacred, earthly, natural process and actually make it natural again? So how is nature integrated into your midwifery care?
Oh, I love that question. That's such a good question. I want to address what you said about death just really quickly. I think, you know, birth and death are rites of passage that every single human on this planet will go through. And it's so interesting how we try to control both so very much, because we're so terrified of the rite of passage of birth and the rite of passage of death. And everybody will do those things. Everybody on this planet will do those things. And I think that birth and death are very, very similar. When we're with someone in labor, what I've observed is that the portals, whatever you want to call it, the openings of death are the same as the openings for birth. And so we often see that women go to these depths emotionally, mentally, spiritually, that I think are similar to those who are dying. And the less we try to control that, and the less we're open to it, and the less we accept that death is a part of our lives, the more open we can be to birth. And so that's probably the first observation with nature, is just knowing that they're inherently connected, and that they're very, very similar, and that we all will get the opportunity to be born and to die. And that birth is often a celebration and death is often really sad for everybody. But like you said, I wish that sometimes we could be more accepting of death, because I think that we would be less afraid to live if we were less afraid of death. Back to your original question, though, I think I will tell you a story. I call them my clients, or sometimes my ladies, but really they're my friends, you know, the women who hire me. And I have one story where one of my clients was deeply connected to nature. It was her first baby. And we had talked about giving birth outside, and I have this big backyard, and we had talked about maybe giving birth in my backyard, but I have neighbors around, and she wanted to really be able to make lots of noise. And so we said, maybe next time, maybe we'll find a better place in nature where you can be noisy and give birth in the middle of the night. And so what she chose to do, she wanted to give birth at the birth center, because she lives in a tiny, tiny, tiny little house. And so she chose to use the birth center as her place of birth. But before that, as she was laboring throughout the day, before she was ready to come to the birth center, she went to the mountains with her husband and her mother and their dog. And they just spent time in the mountains, sitting next to rivers, being among nature, sitting in amongst the trees and the plants. And she did a lot of moving around and breathing in the fresh air. We live really, really close to many, many mountains and canyons. And so it was really easy for her to get into nature and to be really secluded in nature. And her whole pregnancy, she had intentionally taken time to bathe in rivers, very cold rivers, but it felt really, really, really good to her. She was pregnant a lot in the summertime, and so that was really helpful. So she spent a lot of time bathing in rivers, and then during labor spent a lot of time in nature. And then when she felt ready to come to the birth center, she drove with the windows rolled down. She has video of her like smiling with the windows rolled down. And this, keep in mind, she's in labor, you know, she's in pretty advanced labor, and she just was so connected. Then when she came to the birth center, that just kind of translated into her movements and everything in the birth center. We have a rope that hangs from the ceiling of our birth suite, and we have a ladder, and we've got birth balls and all kinds of things. And she hung from the rope and swayed back and forth through much of her labor. and she got on her hands and knees for much of her labor. And then at the end, she chose to have a water birth. So she got in the water and she and her husband caught their baby. We were all standing back just with tears in our eyes. And the baby had a little bit of a moment where he needed to kind of catch his breath and maybe had just was just a little bit like, wow, this is Earth. And I think that in most settings, that baby would have been taken away or would have been vigorously stimulated or most likely would have been separated from his mother. But because we had the dim lights and because his parents were the ones that were right there, we knew that we were able to just sit back and kind of watch the process unfold. Now, sometimes a baby comes out and really does need some extra help from us. But this baby, I knew that if we just left him with his parents, they rubbed him and they talked to him, and he just immediately started, you know, coming to the planet and coming into his parents' arms. And it was the most beautiful thing to watch. And then after her baby was born, her mother was there with her. And this is interesting, Stella. I will do a side note here. So her mother had all C-sections. And mm-hmm. My mother had all C-sections, and it sounds like you were also born by C-section. And so C-section and VBAC and those who have had C-sections and those who have been born by C-sections are all very close to my heart. My mom has done a lot of healing through my work, which is so beautiful. She actually files all of our birth certificates for us. So she gets to see kind of how all of the births turn out. And I think it's been really, really healing for her. But this woman's mother had her by C-section. And I think that one of the things that was so beautiful about her mother being there, they were very, very close. And they had actually done some womb work together before her baby was born. And so they kind of healed each other through having to have that difficult birth, that C-section. And so they did some work together, and then her mom was at the birth, and then her dad arrived at the birth shortly after. And the mom and dad, so we do what we call postpartum baths, and we put essential oils and Epsom salts and flowers and herbs in the bath that are all healing and that are all a way that we can bring nature into the process. So she was in her postpartum bath with her baby, still connected to the placenta and the cord, but we put the placenta in a little bowl and it just kind of floats in the water among all the beautiful flowers. And she was just there nursing her baby, and her mom and dad arrived, and she's very close to her mom and dad. And she decided to do a cord burning. So the grandparents got to take part in severing the cord through a gentle burning. So they each had a candle, and we all took turns holding the candle, and her husband took turns holding the candle. But it was the most beautiful thing to watch the grandparents take part in this sacred ceremony and to bring the element of fire to the birth while she was sitting in water, while she was surrounded by plants. And so those are some of the ways that we bring nature into the births that we do. Many, many of our clients choose to have the postpartum bath, where we do always have flowers on hand and we always have herbs on hand and oils that we put in the bath to kind of help heal the mom. And it's interesting because the moms will come out of the bath and they'll say, oh my gosh, I feel renewed because birth is hard. And a lot of women feel really, really tired after birth, and they feel, obviously they want to, you know, go home and still sleep, but a lot of women feel very renewed. And we use rose petals a lot. We use rosemary and lavender and geranium and comfrey and calendula. And I'm trying to think what else. Frankincense is extraordinary. And then the magnesium Epsom salts. So yeah, it's really special. It's really special to be able to do that.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh, that sounds so wonderful. That sounds so lovely. Birth is something that I think most people actually, even if they had a baby, already know so little about. And that's just incredible to me. And I see so many people, you know, getting C-sections and epidurals and whatever. And my mother, she was also an older mother, and she said she was treated like a raw egg. Like, she was treated like a sick case where everybody was like, you know, you're so old and your complications and this and that. And my mother also said, she was like, always, oh yeah, my My little baby Stella, she could have stayed in there for so much longer, yes. But they, you know, it was a scheduled C-section because I was actually, you know, upside down the wrong way around.
Oh, yes.
And my mother tried everything that, you know, people recommended to her, but I just would not turn. And so she opted to go to the hospital. But, you know, sometimes I think it would be so interesting to see the person I would have become if I would not have been a C-section. And I think that's so crazy to even think that possibly, you know, your life, your constitution could have been really very different. And yeah, that's something that I find, you know, is really for people should be a big focus and something that they're really informed about, that they make this big choice being informed. And yes, as you said, sometimes, yes, it is necessary, but I definitely think not the way it is done today, which, you know, is also proven by some of the things you just told us. And I want to talk about hormones right now, because hormones are a huge topic everywhere, just because of the world we live in. That is a crazy world and sometimes a toxic world. And not even just talking about toxic chemicals, but stress, a lot of stressors and different, again, the root cause of us being just removed from Earth and nature a lot. Yes. And so I want to know from you, what are some of the hormones that are heavily involved in the birth process? And also, what can you tell us about hormone health, which we know hormones are all over the place and up and down and doing, yes, so many different things during pregnancy and birth. But also the issues of all, let's say, toxic chemicals, the food we eat that is so compromised through depleted soils and chemicals, etc. And also all these endocrine disruptors that are out there. Which role do they play, and how can we protect ourselves and our babies at least a bit to create just a safer, less toxic environment?
Well, I want to start out by saying that humans are incredibly resilient. And it's interesting to me that we still birth well when we're subjected to all of these things. And many of us, you know, had so many endocrine disruptors happening to us or ingesting or being around before we even knew what those were. So many of us had that throughout our childhoods or throughout our early adult years or our teenage years. And we still birth well. And I see, you know, babies. I have a mom, and she's given me permission to share this story. She thinks it's kind of funny, so I will share this story. So I had a client once who really, really would not eat well. When I asked her about if she ate vegetables, she would say, "Well, there's sauce on my freezer meal, tomato sauce. Does that count?" Yeah. And then, and she was also vaping, but I didn't know that. And she had a very, very stressful pregnancy she was with an abusive person in her relationship. And when I came to her house, the only reason that I accepted her as a client is because she had been a doula client for someone. Like, she had birthed in the hospital for her previous baby, and my friend was her doula, and she said, "You know what, she births beautifully, she's amazing, she's willing to take responsibility for her health." So with this woman, well, I shouldn't say willing to take responsibility for her health, but completely 110% believed in her ability to give birth. And that belief is huge, 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 huge. So I took her on. She was willing to do things to try to work, you know, on her health. And so I kind of met her where she was, and we really worked on things, and she did her very, very best, which was still, you know, there was still a lot lacking, but she really, really did her best. And when I got called to her birth, I walked in to her labor, and she was in the tub, in a birth tub, very, very relaxed. And so I just walked in very quietly, and her eyes were closed. I didn't say, "Hey, what's going on? I'm here." You know, I didn't want to interrupt that quietness that she had going. It seemed like her oxytocin was flowing very well. And her contractions started, and I didn't notice this before, but she had a vape in her hand, and she took a big long drag on the vape, and then she blew it out. And then she just breathed so gently through that contraction. And then her baby just came out. It, no big deal. Short labor. She hardly bled at all. Recovered perfectly. Her baby was super healthy and strong. And in my mind, I thought, wait a minute, what? Because I sometimes have these clients who are like, you know, like every supplement on the planet, and they're taking and they're doing the utmost care of themselves. And they're so cautious about never putting anything in their mouths that has anything to do with, you know, like that wouldn't even have one kind of toxin in it at all. And sometimes I think, Stella, that the woman who believed innately in her body's ability to give birth so deeply and didn't worry so much about all of the things that she put in her mouth, and then versus the other client who was so worried and scared all the time that everything could have been possibly harming her. Those clients, sometimes they have the biggest complications. And so I've sort of backed up a little bit, and obviously I want people to take good care of themselves, and I want them to be willing to care for themselves, but I don't want clients who are so attached to, you know, like freaking out about driving in a car or drinking from a plastic cup that they worry themselves into a frenzy. Sometimes those clients actually have more complications because they don't take into consideration the stress and emotional side of things as much as they're taking into consideration the physical side of things. So this client actually had another baby. And when she called me and said, "Hey, I want you to be my midwife again," I was like, "Girl, let's do it. You are so in tune with your body. You are so confident in your ability to give birth. And you're so laid back about life in general." Like she took, you know, all, I mean, she had some very difficult things happening in her life for both times. And she was so confident. Like she took those punches, you know, those life punches in stride. And she was very good at dealing with them, that I was like, "You are a perfect candidate for this." So does that make sense? Like she had so, I think we often forget that there are many components to health, and not just, you know, the things that we put inside of our body. So anyway, back to the question that you asked. I do have many, many women coming to me and they say, "Melissa, I can't get pregnant. I need to balance my hormones. Everything's a disaster. I can't sleep. This is happening. This is happening. This is happening." And they'll say, "I need herbs from you. I need you to tell me what to do." And the first question I ask everyone is, "How are you sleeping? And how is your stress level?" Because people forget sleep, and sleep is the sometimes seen as the ugly stepsister of diet and movement. And so people will focus so much on diet, and they'll focus so much on movement, and but they won't sleep. You know, they'll forget about sleep and how important that is. So I always ask people how they're sleeping. And often I'll have people say, "Well, I'm sleeping like 5 to 6 hours a night." And I'll say, "I'm not giving you any herbs. I'm not telling you anything to do with your nutrition. You start sleeping 8 to 10 hours a night and then come back to me if you're still having problems." And so I think that I always start with, you know, the basics. How's your stress level? Are you able to meditate, you know, regularly, or to engage in some form of meditation? For some people, that's taking a walk. For some people, it's tinkering on a, you know, a mechanical project like a car. For some people, that's doing the dishes. So I say, if you have a practice that you can engage in like that, and you regularly get sunshine or connect with the earth. Like I live in a place that has winter for many of the months, and people say, "Well, there's no sunshine." And I say, "There is sunshine. It's behind the clouds. You still have to go outside and put your warm clothes on and still have your face be, you know, in the light." And so I tell people, you know, the best thing you can do for hormones and for hormone regulation, especially when we live in such a disrupted world, is to sleep, get sunshine or outside time, connect with nature. Obviously food is huge, right? But food is just as important as sunshine and nature and sleep. And so almost always, without fail, when people can get those things right, then their hormones do great. They do great and they don't have any issues.
Yeah, I think that's a super point. And I actually love that because I think that's one of the things I also always loved about my mom, that she is a very grounded individual. And that just, what you just talked about, this trust in yourself and this trust in, let's say in broader terms, in the universe.
Yes.
That is this really deep trust. I always imagine it like a tree, you know, a tree with deep roots that just sways with the wind. Like it doesn't fight against the wind. It goes with the wind and the currents, and it's just deeply rooted in earth and just stands there and is grounded. And I think this groundedness, that is also something that is quite lacking today, because it's just such a crazy world. And as you said, some of the things, they're simpler than we think. And we do, you know, people work themselves up into a frenzy, and they are worked up into a frenzy by an overload of information and tips and this and that and supplements and whatever. And I mean, on the other hand, I can totally understand that, like me myself, I'm also trying to find this balance, because the world is just a crazy place. And the world, you know, there's this component of pollution and toxicity and stressors, but there's also this component of, you know, adaptation and our body's ways and nature's ways of dealing with certain things, obviously to a certain extent, but also that we regain this trust and say, okay, you know, stressing about it more and overthinking and getting totally crazy about it, that can be just as harmful as you said, you know, which shampoo are we using? Like that's not going to be maybe the make or break issue. And this is also something I think what so many people say is, like, you know, there's this one person who always exercised and ate like only green things and drank a smoothie every day, and then with 40 got diagnosed with cancer. And then the other person smokes like a chimney and drinks and whatever and never thought about any of these things and lives till 82 and was just fine until they maybe got sick. And then so sometimes we just don't know, and obviously there are genetic and epigenetic components, so some that have nothing to do with our genes, and there's just this huge mix, and we can't predict it, and trying to predict it or to control it, which I think is one of the human issues. We try to control things so hard that we just push too much sometimes.
And I think that letting go, you know, if you can let go and know that everything's not going to be perfect, that's life. Nothing's been perfect. Like, a lot of people like to say, well, I wish I lived in, you know, the times where we lived in villages. And I'm like, that things weren't perfect then either. And everyone likes to think that everything is perfect. Maybe the earth was cleaner then, but also we had wars and disease and people died when they were 26, you know? And I think that we have to just remember, like, we are resilient, and belief in our ability to be a healthy and vibrant human is just as important as sleeping and eating and exercising and getting sunshine. Like, that belief of, you know, believing that I am a divinely created human, and I probably do have some issues from being born by C-section, but I also am a really resilient person, and I can go through this life having a vibrant life if I can live in gratitude, connect with nature, be kind to others. You know, some of the people that I've met who are super, super obsessed with health are some of the meanest people I know. And I think all your supplements are not going to save you from your meanness. You've got to be kind and have gratitude, you know? So, but Stella, I know we're running short on time, that we're almost done, but I wanted to say one quick thing that you really, that really hit me when you talked about being born by cesarean and what kind of life would you had you not been born. And you know, I've struggled. It might make me cry, but one of the things that I recently was talking to my mom about, we're very, very close. And I said, Mom, have you ever considered that possibly before you came to this earth, you know, the universe, the higher power, whomever, was speaking to you and said, listen, your daughter has a really, really important mission to do on this earth, she's going to be called to being a midwife. She's going to be called to bring in humans into the world in a really sacred space. And she's going to be able to touch thousands of lives and make a difference in thousands of families' lives. But in order for her to be able to do that, you need to have a somewhat of a violent birth with her. You need to be cut open. And I just picture my mom, this is making me cry right now, but I just picture my mom saying, I will do anything for my daughter. I'll do anything for her. And I tell people all the time, I don't think I would be doing this work if I hadn't been born by C-section, because I think I was upset at being separated from my mother. I think I was upset at being in such a cold and sterile environment. And I think that it was, you know, ingrained in me at that birth that I wanted to be on a path to make this different for people, you know, to make it better for people. And that if I wasn't born that way, then I wouldn't have been able to touch the lives of thousands of people and bring back this sacred experience into their lives. And my mom, you know, when we talked about that, she just was sobbing and I was sobbing. I just told my mom.
This really made me cry as well. This really resonates a lot. Because yeah, that's totally something. There's so many things in life where I've also thought, you know, I might have been a different person, but there were times where I thought, you know, there is something better out there and things could have been better. But now I'm really at a point where I say, no, nothing could have been better, because everything happened exactly for a reason. Because yes. I don't think that, you know, my mission in life is to really reconnect people to nature, to reconnect myself to earth and to nature. And I've become a very spiritual person. I've become a very loving and caring person, and I love who I am, although in many ways there are things, you know, that really sometimes, you know, bug me, where I'm like, why can't I do this? Why is this so hard for me? You know, why is there so much hardship? But I think this hardship is just character building, and it's like this picture of Phoenix from the ashes. Like, I think without deep pain and hurt and sorrow, you know, on the other side there is just such, like, there's such a huge ball of light and introspection. Mm-hmm. And I can't even find the words for it. Like, there is just such something so big and precious and divine that can be created out of that I don't think can happen if this, you know, deep pain. And like, if it's at some point of your life you feel like you've completely broken open and been exposed, coming together from that, I think, is one of the most beautiful things that can happen in one's life, like a rebirth during life, let's say. Yes. And that's something that creates something so special that I really can say I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. So you're completely right to say that, and thank you for sharing that. And I think you know, being content with that is a learning curve and a path.
It is.
but seeing it as it all has its reason and its way, and connecting it with that deep trust in life, I think can only create something absolutely, let's say, magical. Even it is, it can be magic. That's definitely the case.
I think what you're saying is that you're learning to be human, and I think that's all of us. You know, we're learning, like, everything you just described is that's what it is to be human, is to question and say, what if, and what it is to be human is also to experience pain and also to experience beauty and magic. And I think that we're learning that on this journey, that we are human, and learning to accept that we are human, and learning to accept that we are imperfect, that there will be violence and horrible atrocities in the world, and there also will be great beauty and magic, just, you know, like you said. And it's really, really difficult to accept all of that, because we want so badly for everything to be magic and beauty all the time. You know, that's kind of what we lean toward. And I think, you know, going back to the birth conversation, some of my clients have very difficult births, very, very, very difficult births, despite everything that we do in our power to try to, you know, help it to be a positive experience. And I, one of the things I say in my trainings when I'm training other birth workers is I say, you know what, we can never, ever take away someone's journey. And we wish we could. We don't want to see people experiencing pain, you know. We really, really wish that we could take away the pain. And so sometimes we want to intervene and we want to say, well, maybe if we do this, then you won't have to have the C-section. But sometimes we just have to have the C-section, you know, or sometimes we have to have the very difficult birth. And then what I've noticed in my years and years of practice is that what happens with these women is they come out on the other side and they process through these difficult experiences. And then it informs some part of their life that wasn't there before. And they go on these really beautiful journeys because of that difficulty. And so while in the moment, I want to save everybody from difficult things, even as a mother, you know, I want to save my kids from difficult things. I know that allowing those difficult things to happen and then just being a witness and a support to that is what is the best thing that I can do. So just loving people through the situation, witnessing them through the situation, holding them through the situation and allowing that, that I know that later it's going to blossom into something really beautiful almost always, not always, but almost always.
The fact that, you know, if we trust life and let things unfold, and as you said, just create this space, you know, hold this space to let things unfold naturally and organically, we would gain so much. We would gain so much in this world. And I think this is just also a type of wisdom and a type of connection that kind of has been lost a lot, that we're hopefully, because I'm also seeing so many people wanting that back and yearning for this connection and not just this, you know, floating around on the surface of things and being very superficial, but going deeper and having deep connection. And I mean, experiencing deep, profound beauty also means experiencing deep, profound pain.
Yes.
And just like witnessing everything and basking in everything that life has to offer and basking in nature and in community and connection and healing. I think that's something that many people and that we as society are generally missing out on, because we are deep down, I think the root is just being so afraid. Like
we're terrified of pain and of life. Yes, and that fear is way more uncomfortable sometimes than the actual pain, but we're not willing to go away from that because it's what I call familiar discomfort. We're so familiar with that fear that we know it. And so it feels comfortable, even though it's discomfort, it's uncomfortable. And so it, because we know it, we're way less afraid of it, even though it's probably a lot more pain than if we would just allow ourselves to feel some of that pain, you know?
And it's just this fact that I think we're so scared of letting life and natural earthly processes unfold that we restrain and restrict and control everything. We control birth and nature and earth and ecosystems and, you know, the oceans, animals, anything we can get our hands on, we're trying to put into boxes and to try and make it safe and controllable and profitable. And it's just like, you know, hoarding things, and we're just not trusting the flow of life. And I think the theme of this should be, which birth I think is a beautiful picture for, is just trying to trust the flow of life and being embedded in it and going along with it and trying to create less resistance and opening ourselves up to the universe and to earth. I think we would gain a lot from that.
Yes, I agree.
I am so excited for other people to hear this and to maybe cry and laugh with us and to maybe have, you know, I think my goal is always for people to listen in and say, this is something new, this is something different, and I just opened up a new neural pathway and there's something that maybe I can take into my life. And I also encourage everyone to check out your website, especially if somebody is pregnant right now, if they're about to give birth. I think this could be a beautiful podcast. And, you know, if somebody is lucky enough to be in Utah, in Provo, in the region, and feels like they should reach out to you after this podcast, I will link all your information down below.
You're so sweet.
Yes, and I hope somebody will find the love and support and a sacred space with you. And thank you so much for sharing your voice and also these beautiful stories on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity, Stella. It was so, so wonderful to talk to you.
Also, I want to acknowledge and honor Indigenous and First Nations peoples as custodians of most of planet Earth's biodiversity and bearers of ancient knowledge. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize all Indigenous and First Nations peoples' strength, resilience, and deep connection to nature. Thank you.